Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, it's episode 516 of This Is Whole Life. Every week we're digging just a little bit deeper into the messages and the special messages that are happening here at Whole Life Church. This past week was a very special message by one of our very own. And this was, I didn't realize this going in, but this was part of the Voices of Whole Life. This was one of ours for this year, isn't it? It wasn't.
Nope. This was young adults hosting the worship this week.
Because it felt like the caliber, like we, you know, Voices of Whole Life is one of our best series every year, and the caliber of preaching is always exceptional. So I was
wait for Voices of Whole Life to have high caliber preaching.
No, of course not. I mean, you
any
asked
weekend's
me,
not preaching. It's going to be high caliber.
So. I was going to say, you asked me to preach a couple weeks ago, so I mean, obviously high caliber. Brother. Anyway, I tried to say that with a straight face, and I couldn't. Anyway, guys, we are going to introduce you to our special guest in just a moment. But of course, the conversation here can only lack one thing, that's you. You can send a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or podcast at wholelife.church, just like Carolina Dave. Because while he didn't send one this week, we've appreciated hearing his voice. It's always good to hear the voice. I mean, I can sometimes feel the voice in words, but I can't hear the voice. So always extra credit if for a voicemail. So this week, I don't know how we did it, but even though Ken wasn't preaching, everybody is here that's supposed to be here. Ken to my right, I didn't even have to turn.
Look at that. You didn't have to make a big turn, you were telling the truth.
I know.
Because you finally assumed your position at the head of the table.
Oh, yeah.
Dad's at the front of the table.
And next to Ken is Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor. On the other end is the other half of the comms team here, Lucas, and I'm Randy. And special guest, who wants to do the honors? Melanie?
I would love to do the honors, but my French is not fantastic, so uh-oh, I'm gonna struggle through it. Nahimi Velje?
Yes.
Oh, what? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Good job, Melanie. I didn't want to make you look bad. I took French in high school, and that's the reason I didn't get a college prep degree.
I didn't take it either because it was.
I took it. I just didn't pass it.
Well, taking it's half the battle, I think.
No, it's not. Passing it's most of the battle.
So, as I mentioned briefly before, this week in the Slack channel, as we have, I just want to shout out, big welcome to Joe, Scott, Keith, and Cliff, who have all recently joined the Slack channel.
Nice job.
Let's face it, we've been posting some gold over there. I mean, there was the Brazilian Randy running through the mountains on a motorcycle recently. There was Melanie and, oh, dear sweet Sophie. Mm. I've just been going back to check the pics because, like, baby fever is upon us.
I have more.
Oh. Yeah, I was given the opportunity to see some amazing grandbaby pictures today.
So, what's up, K-pop?
Actually, video. It was pretty great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, that just strengthened K-pop's resolve that this must come?
Oh, you didn't even introduce
I'm
that.
Not gonna, no, you? Yeah, that's for you. You have to, because you tell the story better than anybody else.
Oh, no. I mean, Joe Mitsouris, you are the man, the myth, the legend.
Obviously.
Joe sends me a text message and says, duh.
Everybody
knows
Kenny.
What your grandpa name needs to be. It's got to be K-pop. So K-pop it is, I think.
Yeah.
What do you think?
K-pop. Demon Hunter and Diaper Changer.
No. Just K-pop.
You're a pastor. Whoa. So that technically, I think, still fits, right?
Just K-pop.
Wow, he's picky now.
You know, Grandpa Kenny had a nice ring to it, but it's hard to go against K-pop.
Can't beat K-pop.
I think so. So, you know, Carolina Dave, let us know what you think about K-pop. And now that, you know, I know you put your vote in last time. And so let us know what you think of K-pop. But I think that's pretty brilliant. So,
good job, Joe.
Good job. Good job. All right. Well, Nahimi, let's get down to business. So tell me, in four words or less. No, I'm just totally kidding. Totally kidding. No, seriously.
What is your philosophy of life and what is the meaning? Why do you exist? And no.
Every year, you know, when we have somebody, we have multiple guest speakers, and I'm always curious because, I mean, I know a couple of weeks ago how we arrived at what I would speak on. So did, when they asked you to preach, was it, did they give you a topic or did they let you pick?
Oh, they let me pick. I volunteered to preach. Can you believe it?
You volunteered?
Yes.
You weren't voluntold?
Look at you.
No.
Whoa.
Love that enthusiasm.
That's
awesome.
Now that's even more bonus points.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
So you're not voluntold, you volunteer, and it was bring whatever message you have?
Yes. It was
my own topic. So Hannah was your idea?
Yeah.
And so why Hannah?
I think for me in the season that I am in my walk with God, I find that the Lord is just comforting me.
Mm.
And so I just, I was in prayer asking the Lord, you know, what story, either New or Old Testament. And I was drawn to Hannah. And I think because I'm at the hospital and I work with people who are always pouring out their heart and to God or to their creator, I felt more drawn to Hannah. And I think for me as well, for the past couple of weeks, especially the past 4 months, every day or every week, I'm like crying unto the Lord. So I think it was just fitting for the season in my life.
Wow. Hannah's a kind of a cool story that I don't feel like we get to very often. And that in the irony of Eli accusing her of being drunk and then having, you know, I won't word it nearly as well as you did about, you know, like really the problems with his own family and his own son. And yet here he is totally misreading the situation. And it made me think like, wow, you could really put yourself in that position so easy and feel like that. I mean, it's happened to all of us, mm-hmm. but to feel that, and then for her, and maybe this is something you could expound on a little bit. How did she handle herself so gracefully? And it seems like she gave a really nice answer right off the cuff. Because I know that usually the things that immediately come to mind aren't always the nicest when you've been, you know, talked to in an inappropriate manner, or you've been like yourself has been challenged, you know, by somebody else who clearly doesn't know the situation. Maybe that's the best part about the whole story. Mm-hmm. How did that resonate with you when you were thinking about the message and putting that together with how she responded?
Yeah, I think Hannah's name, I can't remember for sure. Don't quote me. I think her name meaning has to do with grace or something along the line of it. So I thought it was fascinating for her to not only respond with grace, but she was in the presence of God as well.
Mm.
And I think for her, responding to him, he was just, I think it, for us,
yeah,
the people in our lives, sometimes they're doing things that we don't agree with. But I think at times it's easier to call out people who are not in our lives because it's like we're not connected to them. It's easier to do so. So I think that's what it was with Eli and Hannah. And for Hannah, I think because she was more focused on what was happening to her, that she wasn't fazed by him. She was in the presence of God and pouring out her heart. And she knew the truth. She knew that she was not drunk. And I think sometimes when we know the truth, you just walk in that. So that's what it is.
Well, that really says something about where she probably was then emotionally. If you're that far in the silence, in the, I don't have answers, maybe I don't feel God, maybe I don't see him around me working in what I'm praying for, that you could take that in such stride where it's like, oh, that's just water rolling down my back. It's not a problem. That really puts her suffering in maybe a different light than already seems pretty heavy considering being barren as a woman in that time, right?
And you said that, did I miss it or was the, and I was going to go back and read it and I had a mark here and I did not go to do that. And did it say that you, and I think you said God closed her womb. Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm.
What? I mean, those are one of the questions. I mean, you can't answer because who knows why, but that would definitely have been seen as like some kind of an affliction on her part, right? At that time, would it like she would have been? I mean, obviously, what was the
Panana?
Panana, yes. I mean, they certainly took opportunity to ridicule and be mean and put down and just subject to all kinds of just nastiness. Would that come from a place where they thought that she was like a sinner in that time? Is that what I mean? Is that part of the?
Oh, I think culturally there was kind of some shame attached to barrenness, but it was also about status as well, because okay. You know, your children were your legacy, your children were your children, yes. And grandchildren and so on were your eternal life, and they were also your protection and your providers. So not having a child in that day and age was a pretty sad thing. Not just because, you know, maybe a woman wants to be a mother, but also because it affects her whole entire life. And I think, you know, in the text it says God closed her womb, and I don't think there was a lot of information back then about how, you know, how reproduction takes place and what all the different factors are that can make fertility an issue. So I think they interpreted it through the same lens that they interpret, you know, whether or not it rained or whether or not the crops, you know, harvested or whether or not, you know, locusts came or whatever. They interpreted it through a divine lens. So I think it was when she couldn't have children, when someone couldn't have children, I think that's the way that they understood it, that God closed the womb.
And it's also kind of weird. Who was the first to be, was she the first or the second wife?
I don't know the answer to that, actually.
She was the favorite wife.
She was a favorite.
Well, he left her more because she couldn't have kids.
Was there more to it than that? Or was that, I mean, that's kind of what I took away from it, was that he felt almost, I don't know if he loved her more, but that he felt bad for her because he gave her the double portion. Was it because of that, do you think?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing, because in that time and place, a man wouldn't necessarily feel bad for a wife that wasn't able to bear children, because that was the function that in that society he would have expected her to be able to have children. In fact, I do believe, Melanie, and I don't think I'm making this up, that a man had the right to divorce a woman who wasn't able to produce children for him.
Whoa.
So the fact that he not only kept her as a wife but favored her signals that they had a deep connection as in their relationship.
There are some echoes of Rachel and Leah there as well, with, you know, Rachel being the favored wife who couldn't have children initially. I think that's an interesting repeating trope.
Yeah. Well, and I love when you referenced, how long, O Lord, how long shall my enemy be exalted over me? And you know, and then you said, you know, we serve a God who hears, because if he heard them, he hears us, and he hears you in all of your broken places. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, with what we've been talking about lately, with maybe someone who's just been kind of hanging out where Hannah was, or maybe not even that deep, but it always feels like that, seemingly no matter how deep it is, it always seems desolate and cold. And that's a nice reminder when you think about, when you said that, I was like, man, that feels really good, even if I'm not in a place right now where that's the case, to be reminded that God is listening, he knows, he hears. And you said you've kind of been going through that phase right now yourself a little bit over the last couple months. How does that realization that, you know, others before us have cried out and we get to eventually see the outcome of their strife and all of that they go through, and they're crying out to God and to eventually see that and come to that conclusion that he's a God who hears. Have you heard God lately, or how do you hear God?
Through my prayer time, through journaling, through studying the word and others, through worship music.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that.
Just a mixture of everything, to be honest with you.
Yeah. How about journaling? That's always, if someone says journaling, I always have to just follow up and ask, because it's something that seems like, you know, everyone should have a good pen or a pencil that feels mm-hmm. good in their hand. And I know my good friend Rodley was always like, everyone must have a Moleskine. If you don't have a Moleskine, are you even alive? Because this is where we keep ideas. This is where we talk to God. This is where we journal. And I probably have two or three books somewhere sitting in a box.
Empty or full?
First three pages. I have those too.
Ken is...
My New Year's resolution is... ...
I was going to say...
Blank page.
Ken jumped way ahead of the curve with three pages.
I have gone through the highs and lows of journaling, and I mean... I will tell people who come into my office that they should journal, and I will freely admit I don't really follow what I preach, but I'm told it's really good for you. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think for me, I shared with Melanie how my mind gets crazy at times, and until I write it down, there's no peace. Mm. So when I do feel overwhelmed, I literally have to write thoughts for thoughts and journal. And
really?
Even my prayer, like growing up in Adventism and the Caribbean, like it was very intense and I didn't know how to manage. I didn't know my emotions. But as I got closer to the Lord, I realized like there's different ways that we can worship Him. For some people, you get on your knees and you pray and you spend 30 minutes in prayer. And for me, it's while I'm walking my dog and I'm talking to Him and I'm listening to worship music. And so journaling for me is staple. What's really important. That's where I hear from God and I put my thoughts down. And so it's been really helpful.
So let me ask you a question, because, and this is a real question. It's going to sound a little, maybe like it's not, but seriously.
Okay.
So I think one of the things that keeps me back from journaling is I don't want people reading what I write.
Yeah.
Is that something you worry about? Or are you just like, whatever, people will read what they'll read. And if they pick it up and they shouldn't be reading it, so be it. And if I'm gone later on and they read these things, then whatever. Are you ever careful about what you write? Because you're like,
I write it all down.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. And I'm like, if it's, you know, if they find it, they'll get a piece of my heart. I don't know. And I think the first pages of my journal, I write my name, like, please do not open past this page. If you find it, call me. But I try to just let it out and I try to keep it safe. But I've never lost a journal or any of that. But if I do, it's just like, well, they'll get a piece of my heart and my story. And hopefully the Holy Spirit, they'll see Jesus in there. So hopefully they'll encounter Him through my journal. Yeah.
So maybe dumb question, but you enjoy it?
Oh, I love journaling.
Like you sit down and you put pen to paper or pencil to paper and you're like, yes.
Yeah. 20, 30, 45 minutes or go by and you're like, oh, wow, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. I journal at the park in the morning for devotional.
So you'll take it with you?
Yeah, I take it with me, especially with like even prayer. Some people get on their knees this way. I don't do that a whole lot.
Okay.
More so, I guess my journal is my knee. And I kind of write my prayers and my thoughts, and it's like everything to me.
Do you go back and read them later?
Oh, yeah, especially when I'm going through hard times. And then I have a journal with like answered prayers. When I'm having a hard time, I'm like, okay, this is how the Lord came through for me. It's going to be okay. Don't worry. I know it's overwhelming, but just read through these.
Wow, that's maybe if nothing else. I mean, everyone likes to remember when God came through for them, or anyone comes through for them, for that matter. So maybe the journaling could start with, here's an answered prayer journal. And that might at least be something that, like you said, when you get to those places where you're crying out to God, something good to go back and reflect on.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you can go back and read it without judgment on yourself. That's something I have a hard time doing, is not judging myself. For, you know, if I go read something that I've written in the past, I think, oh, why did I think that way? Or why was I processing that way? Or that was, you know, a really underdeveloped way of thinking about that. So I admire that you can go back and give yourself grace and you know, find your development in your writing.
Oh, yeah. And then if I'm ever overwhelmed, around you guys, just like, Nahimi, did you journal this week? And if it's a no, you're like, okay, this is,
this girl, is
you, need to, you need some time with your journal. And so,
yeah. Do we need to leave you for 30 minutes to go and catch up? That's okay. That's good. No, I think that's a good point though, Melanie, because often we'll talk about during conversations like this about how maybe our worst enemy is ourselves and our own negative self-speak when it's like, okay, well, this is retribution from God because, well, you know what you did a couple of weeks ago that you said you were sorry, but did you really mean it? You know, and you can take any situation and you can just keep chipping away at any progress or anything positive you did. And you can end up with this bag of garbage again where you're like, man, I really stink as a human being. This is bad. So maybe that part is having good self-speak. Mm-hmm. I think that might be a gift. Is that something that you have, good self-speak to yourself?
Oh, yeah. I try to with therapy as well. But like whenever I'm going through something, growing up, I was very, confidence wasn't super big. I was always hard on myself. And so I always have to, hey, Nahimi, it's okay. You've got this. It's okay for you to feel this way. Let's give it to the Lord. And so I always have to.
So what was that process? What was the change from judging yourself and doing judgmental internal talk to your positive internal talk?
I'd have to credit that to CPE, my training to becoming a chaplain. Just a lot of internal work, my theology, my belief, my upbringing, my hurts, my trauma, and just really like looking at them and just say, hey, this was what it was, but we can do better and it wasn't your fault or whatever. You can, you know, be better. And so CPE did an amazing job at just helping me to get to know myself and to be better for the Lord and through the Holy Spirit. But I'm constantly learning more about myself.
But, how long has it been since you went through that training?
I did my first unit spring of 2020, just right when COVID hit.
Wow.
Then I went to seminary 2020 to 23, and I came back for residency 23 to 24.
Okay. So for you, that CPE, was that even more... So people talk about their time going to the seminary and CPE. Were they a nice balance for each other? Did you find like one that kind of helped you more than the other when it came to your personal walk with God, or were they both just had different things that they played? The CPE and CPE stands for
Clinical Pastoral Education,
right? So between that and what you did at the seminary, which one? How did they stack? What were the differences? I think there may be people who are listening that'd be curious about that.
Yeah, I think for me, going to seminary was very an eye opening. I grew up at home. I'm the first child out of five. So I was kind of like a mother figure to my siblings and always like a parent, right? I didn't ask for that, but that's just how it was. And so going away to seminary was very much like getting to know Nahimi. Who is Nahimi? Who is God to Nahimi? Like, how do I make friends and remain in friends and have fun without my siblings or my parents? And I think I did a unit of CPE before seminary. Mm-hmm. And so completing that really helped me to practice what I just learned, how to be present to myself, how to be present with others, because I got a chance to work in the seminary as a grad assistant. And so I got to be with the seminary students and to sit with them. And sometimes they'll come in, can you help me with my classes? And I'll just practice what I learn in CPE and just like listening to them and being present to them. So I think it was a good balance for both.
Nice.
Especially having that first unit, because usually you do a unit while you're in seminary and then after you're done. And then going into residency, I was very much open. I'm always up to learning. I love, like, you learn things. You never arrive. And so CPE just really helped me to just learn more about myself.
I have to say, that's one of the things I really love about CPE is that everybody who does it feels like they come out a little bit more balanced personally. I've just kind of watched that through the years that I've been aware of people who do this these things. And it really, because of that focus on and correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but basically because there's such a focus in CPE on kind of figuring out yourself and what's going on inside, and because you have to be able to do that to sit beside people in a hospital setting, particularly people who are going through incredibly difficult things, if you're bringing your own baggage into that room, then you're not really helping them, because you're sometimes we use other people to help us deal with our own baggage rather than them being there to really support them. And mm-hmm. So it feels like that CPE process really refines people. In your case, you're talking about how it really taught you how to journal and be less self-critical of what you put down on paper. Mm-hmm. And I've watched that in a lot of different people who become chaplains and go through that program. So it's one of the things that it really impresses me about it.
Yeah. I like to say CPE saved my life physically and emotionally. Mm. I think up until that point, there were so much emotions, but my background, I'm Haitian, we weren't taught to like sit in our emotions, right? And so I think CPE really was like, okay, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to cry. It's okay. It's okay to come to the Lord with that. He's not angry with you. And so I like to say like CPE literally saved my life emotionally, because at that time, I graduated college. I didn't know who am I, who is God? And so going through CPE just helped me figure out all that.
And I think that I'd love to double click on sit in your emotions a little bit, because if I'm going to be honest, it makes me feel uncomfortable when you say that.
Yeah. It used to for me, but it's more so acknowledging your emotions and say, listen, I was created with these emotions, I ought not to demonize them, and I just release them unto the Lord. That's what I say to some of my patients. Like, it's okay for you to be sad. This is overwhelming. And you can, you know, bring it to the Lord. He's not going to, oh, you should be happy, you know? And so just sitting with it, acknowledging it and say, Lord, I will give it to you and I can take your peace. And so, yeah.
And to do that, you're saying in order to do that, and CPE will teach you have to actually acknowledge the emotions. You can't just say, I think I'm feeling sad, but we're not going to think about that. I'm just going to shove that into a back corner. Because you talked about the culture you grew up in. The culture that I grew up in was very much, if you feel sad and you want to shed a couple of tears, that's fine. And then let's go ahead and you're done. Move it to the back of your brain and don't deal with it anymore. And, I think one of the favorite sayings growing up is there's no use crying over spilled milk. That was kind of one of the sayings that I grew up with, meaning, you know, once something's done, it's done. Yeah. So just move on. But you're saying that's not healthy. No. CPE would say that's not healthy. And I know some of the answers. I'm just wanting you to kind of tease it out, because I think there are people who would be listening to this who would say, yeah, I really feel uncomfortable with this idea of sitting in my emotions like Hannah was, to weeping in front of God. It's like, I just need to, you know, just kind of, you know, in the British world, stiff upper lip and, you know, just kind of shove it to the back and just keep on moving. Why isn't that healthy? And what is the healthy alternative?
I think, like I said, I believe that the God of the Bible, he is a holistic God. So he not only cares about us spiritually in that he saved us through Jesus, but also emotionally and physically. And so with our emotions, for me growing up, it was more so like, you're a child. You don't have bills to pay. Why are you crying? You should be okay. And so CPE was like, hey, these are your emotions. You were created. Literally, the Lord cries. You know what I mean? God was angry. He has these emotions and you were made in his image. And so I think maybe when we start looking at ourselves like God sees us, hey, I created you in my image. So it's okay for you to cry. It's okay for you to come to me with that. I'm not going to hate you for that. And so, and that's also baby steps, you know, it took years for me to get to this point. You know, I didn't just wake up, oh my gosh, I'm comfortable with my emotion. Matter of fact, growing up, the thoughts of emotions, just like, like, what is this? I don't want to talk about it. And so it's a process. So I would also say, be gracious with yourself. If you're at a point where you want to release and surrender, just be gracious with yourself and come to God like, Lord, I am feeling sad today. I don't know what's going on. Would you just help me to know what is happening? And I know we serve a God who loves our honesty. as ugly as it may be to others.
So how do you, as a chaplain, give people permission? How do you work with people who are experiencing big emotions and maybe not wanting to deal with them? Or do you encourage them? Hey, go ahead. It's okay. Or how do you guide somebody who you can tell is going through some things, but maybe like me is trying to shove it into the back of their brain, not really actually deal with it. What do you do in those situations? How do you encourage people on their journey of kind of dealing with emotions that they may not want to?
For me, you know, walking into a room, I introduce myself. And especially I had a patient's family this week who was really just overwhelmed with what was going on with her husband. And I sat with her. I'm like, hey, I'm here to just be with you. Would you mind sharing your heart with me? And she began talking of how hard it was for her. And she started crying. And I just was like, hey, I'm here. And there are moments of silence. I think sometimes we don't like moments of silence because it's awkward. Yeah. But I thrive off of it. Whenever I'm with a patient and there's no words, we just sit in the silence. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no. No need to apologize. And she had already told me she was a believer. And I was like, you know, God, it's okay for you to cry. It's okay for you to feel this way. And I also talked to her, was like, you know, sounds like you're going to through the stages of grief. You're sad right now, even though yesterday you were okay. It's just a roller coaster. And just sit with them. I think because of the training and because I've been able to sit in my own emotions with the Lord and with others, that now I am able to do the same thing. And so there's never a moment, even when at the hospital, there's a code and they call us. I kid you not, I'm so like at peace. I'm like not worried, but it's just more so because I've done the work as well. Now I'm able to sit with the patient, no matter how ugly it may look to others. I just feel really comfortable. Like emotions don't scare me. And I used to be scared of it because I didn't understand it. And so that's what I would say.
That validation, basically, that you were talking about, that realizing that God is just there waiting, just like you're with the patient. It's okay. Go ahead and cry. And I feel like I grew up in Haiti North. If that's what Haiti was like, that was definitely, you know, you definitely stuffed emotions. You didn't talk about it. And you certainly didn't take pauses while someone cried because that was a waste of time. What are you mm-hmm. crying for? You know, and it was just not a thing. So to hear you say that, and then again, make one of those realizations that God's like, look, I made you. I know you're the good. I know the bad. I know what you're feeling. And go ahead, tell me. Mm-hmm. And that's an invitation that if you've never had one, that's difficult enough sometimes though, because it's like, I don't know what to do. This is completely new territory to digging into emotions or to connecting emotions. Nevertheless, I feel like there's times when you really feel like you need to, but where do you start? And so what do you do if you're at that point where you just like, you haven't done CPE, you haven't done any of those things. And you're trying to just say, okay, I'm fine. I know God is there. I know he's listening. I know everything, the validation that he created me and I'm important, but I don't feel important. And I don't even know where to begin with, like why I'm either sad or I'm angry or whatever it is. How do you get started if that's not something you've been ever shown how to do?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I would like to throw it off to our Melanie.
Say the question one more time.
It just like growing up, we weren't given the opportunity, at least in our family, it was, you know, shut up or I'll give you something to cry about, right? Like it was just, you did something wrong or you were punished or something happened that you couldn't process. Like I remember when my great-grandfather died, I'd only met him a couple times, but he was this really unique individual. And I think I was maybe 7, 8. And I remember we were at my grandma's house after the funeral. And I remember my brother like, would you just shut up already and go to bed? He was on the top bunk. And if you're listening, it's okay. I would have done the same thing. I'm sure of it. But not knowing like the full extent of why I was upset. I mean, I knew why, but I didn't understand the feelings behind it. And even now there's things that come and you just aren't sure again, like, why is this happening? What am I really, what's the root cause? If you've never been taught how to process anything like that, where it's just like, no, stuff it, forget it. We've grieved, we're moving on, there's things to do. How do you help someone who really doesn't know, like, where to start? Is it just prayer for, like, for you, is it prayer? Is it just that awkward time where I'm just going to sit and be quiet? What would you tell someone that just doesn't know what to do to start?
I would invite them into prayer, to give their hearts to God and just like, hey, Lord, this is the reality. And this is how I talk with God as well. Lord, here I am with this. I'm not quite sure how to go about it. Would you send someone my way? Mm. Would you sit with me? Would you comfort me this week with this? And I'm 199.9% because we live in a sinful world, right? That the Lord will provide. He will do something for you, even if it's small, big or small. And so those I would say, or if you do have someone that you trust, that you can go to them or sign up for a therapy session or go to your pastor and just say, hey, this is what's going on. I'm not quite sure how to approach it, like someone that you trust as well. So like for me, when I was going through my process, I was seeking the Lord and brought a youth pastor at our church and just different individuals to guide me along. And that was through prayer or like, Lord, I something is happening. I don't understand. I just need your help and your support. Would you just make a way? And that, I'm pretty sure he will make a way.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and add on to that a little bit. And I really appreciate what you're saying, Nahimi, because I think that for a lot of us, we don't know what to do when somebody's in that situation and we start trying to project ourselves onto it. Well, this is what's worked for me and this is, you know, and nobody is you. You are you. And so what worked for you may or may not work for another person. And so that part of just being present is a possibility, I think, and just listening and being available and not shutting people down and not making it an uncomfortable space for them, but just being there to hold their hand, put your hand on a shoulder, and just be present and listen and care. For a lot of people, it's surprisingly cathartic just to be able to word salad and to vomit. Word vomit onto people, in a room, because how many places on this earth can you feel safe in just saying whatever's on your heart and feel like it's not going to hurt you in some way? And so I think that's one of the gifts of chaplaincy, of good pastoral work, is to be able to be present and not be judgmental of what comes out of somebody's mouth, but rather be there for them and care about them. The other thing that I have to do, and a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do CPE. It is something you can look into if it's something you're interested in, by the way. But if you don't have that opportunity, another opportunity besides going and seeing a pastor is something else that she mentioned, which is seeing a counselor. Counselors are very good at helping those of us who may not be going to CPE, not going to be a chaplain, but you want to do some of that personal work. And what I would also really encourage people to understand is that as you're doing that personal work, it's like an onion. There's layers and layers and layers. And every time you think you finally like, oh, I finally got myself figured out, you find there's another layer there. And I just saw my counselor yesterday, actually. I see a counselor at least once a month, whether I think I need to or not. And it's amazing how every time I'll show up and I'll think, I've really got nothing to talk about. And 50 minutes later, I leave with sniffling and then whatever else. But you know, yesterday he said something to me that really impacted me. He said, Ken, trauma is generational and you want to get over it. He was very much nicer than this, but I'm paraphrasing it. He basically said, you want to get over it right away, but it took generations to get to where you're at with the things that you're dealing with in your life. And so to think that you're just going to all and, you know, snap your fingers and suddenly everything's going to melt away and everything's going to be perfect, that's just not realistic. And it does, you know, Nahimi, you said putting in the work. And that's really something I think I'd encourage people to think about. It isn't just a show up. And I think a lot of people want to approach God and they want God to just suddenly do the miracle. They no longer feel the pain. They're all good. And you miss out, if that happens, sometimes you miss out on the journey of it that is more important than getting rid of the pain. It's the understanding of why you got to this place and how things are. And so, you know, my encouragement to those of you who are listening to this, and firstly, it was such a good sermon. Thank you for it. But, you know, my encouragement is be looking for the places in your life where you can unpack what's going on. And then don't expect things to be perfect overnight, and give yourself the grace and forgiveness to be okay. You know, a little earlier I said, I feel a little judged when I say, I feel uncomfortable hearing that, right? I feel like, oh, maybe she's going to think less of me because of it. But it's the truth. I do feel a little uncomfortable with it. And part of it is because the way I grew up, the culture I grew up in, and things like that. And because I haven't done all the CPE work that you've done. And there's other work that I've done in my life, but there's more work to be done. And so those are things where we need to just be able to be vulnerable with each other and say, hey, this is where I'm at. And I think that, by the way, for those of you out there that might, if you want your pastors and chaplains to be real with you, you can't punish them when they are. I remember being in one group and just sharing something. It was something that was from my past. It was in the past. And it was a group discussion on that particular topic. And I came out of it and saw a member of that group a couple weeks later, and they said, oh, I just can't believe you're a pastor and that's a part of your past. And it made me think, I don't really want to speak up in that group anymore because it doesn't feel safe. I mean, just because there's things that have happened in my past doesn't mean that I am not called or that God hasn't, just means that that I have trauma just like you. And there are things that I'm working through in my life just like you.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I just really encourage you as you look at your chaplains, as you look at your pastors, just right, they're people. And sometimes I think God takes some of the people who need to work on their trauma the most
and put them in ministry
and gives them the opportunity to do so. Anyway, but I really appreciated the sermon because I think it's a sermon that really hit home for a lot of people who are going through difficult times. I talked to a couple of those people after the church service that your sermon touched them because of where they were at and the things they're going through, and really hoping that God was hearing them and wondering in the moment whether that was it or whether, you know, what's going to happen next. So I really appreciated the beauty you brought to that and the encouragement, but the realism as well. So I thought it was just a really well done sermon.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll just chime in really quick. I think another practical way, if you're not used to thinking about your emotions or feeling your emotions or processing your emotions, we're really complex people with complex emotions. And I think in order to be able to understand and process your emotions, you have to be able to build a bigger emotional vocabulary. In other words, you have to be aware of all the different kinds of emotions that are out there so that you can start thinking, oh, I'm feeling this way and this way and this way. Because a lot of us have not, you know, a lot of people have not been taught emotions beyond happy, sad, angry, you know, but there's a whole spectrum of emotions that we go through. And if we have the language to talk about it, it's easier to actually start processing that.
I like that. The thing I didn't want to leave before we talked about was, you said Hannah ran to God, the very God who allowed her situation. He closed her womb. He wasn't absent in it. He was sovereign over it. And he allows seasons in our lives that we don't fully understand. And then, you know, you talked about how Hannah, you know, comes to God begging, like, I will, if you give me a son, I'll give him back to you. And the posture of surrender and humility. And you said, God lets you get to a place where you realize he is your only option and sometimes your most honest offering before God is your tears. And that was really a really beautiful, when you think about it in that way, about what, you know, where she was, what she was thinking, and to somehow be clear and cognizant of who God was. And I feel like she really realized it and said, okay, if this is who you are, this is who I know you to be, then here's my, I love the fact that she's in a way bartering with God. If you give me, I will give you for his entire life. And there was something really, really touching about that as a dad who is like, I mean, you hope your kids are with God all the time, right? And you hope that never changes. But also to say, look, God, I will, if you give me, you know, you give me one of my girls, I will make sure, you know, and it seems like a big thing to say with a lot of weight behind it, more so than just, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, my kids are God's kids. Of course. I mean, that's, you know, that's easy, but that seems very superficial compared to what Hannah did, that posture in humility. I feel like that's like right in there with gratitude. Like if I have gratitude for what God is, can do for me, has done for me, you believe that if you, like you said, if you ask him, God, I really need someone this week, he'll provide. Mm-hmm. That's a very enticing picture of where to be as a Christian. And so that's just something I hope people take away from your message, is just that posture of humility that she had, with a little gratitude and not worrying always about what you get, but what you can give back. It feels really good. It feels really good. Thank you for that.
Of course.
I also want to just chime in. One of the things that I appreciated, Nehemiah, as we were working through this and talking about it, the emphasis that you had on God listening and God hearing is not necessarily the same thing as God answering. Mm. Because, you know, we have this wonderful story of Hannah, who kind of just presents herself before God and barters and prays and cries and really puts her heart out there. And God eventually answers that prayer and gives her the desire of her heart. And I, you know, we had a beautiful baby dedication second service where it was a similar story of a family who just really prayed and laid it all out for God, and God gave them the desire of their heart. And there are a lot of people who don't receive the desire of their heart. And I was thinking about, you know, those people who, you know, who it's really hard. You'd really try to be happy for somebody else in the way that God has answered them, but your arms are still empty. And so I appreciated the fact that you focused a lot on God being present with you and God listening and God hearing your cry versus the answer that God is giving. Because I think even now, you know, back in those times, people would sort of judge you or whatever for not having children. And I think that even now, you know, we talk about, well, Hannah was amazing because she did this and she did this and she did this. And I think for people who have not had their cries answered, it can feel a lot like, well, you know, am I just not being humble enough? Am I not, you know, promising the right things? Am I not doing whatever it is that would get me to that point? And so I think there still can be a little bit of spiritual judgment either on yourself or even on others. Well, why, where's your faith or something like that when not everybody has the same outcome. And so I appreciated that your focus was on God being present, God listening. Mm.
Lucas, did we have any questions?
Yes, I got one here. It's actually related to what Melanie was just saying. I love the message today. It is very timely for me. Sometimes it feels like God hears, but is a little slow to act when I need action. How can we deal with what appears to be slow action from God?
Well, I think we've kind of had a conversation about that.
Yeah.
I think the processing with people and the, you know, praying over it, those are all some of the ways that you can deal with that when it doesn't feel like God is doing what you want God to do.
That's such a good question, though, because I think we've all been there at some point where we have felt that way. So, to think that, like Melanie just talked about, you know, to feel like, well, am I not worthy? And that's where that, you know, that self-speak is, I think, so important, too, to realize, you know, the validation that God created us and we are enough and he's there listening. That was one of my favorite parts, that he hears you and he's always, you know, he heard Hannah. He hears us now. It's the same thing. But to Melanie's point, the outcome isn't always guaranteed. And if it's not, what does that mean for us? And maybe that's really where we ask God to come and sit with us. Like you said, like, I don't understand this because I've seen X, Y, and Z. I know that you can. And that's sometimes maybe the hardest place to be in is that, you know, seeing what everybody else or how other outcomes came about other than yours.
Yeah. I think for me, I love to pray. I'm always praying 24/7. And what I've learned thus far in my 30 years of living, or however long I've been following Jesus, is that prayer for me, as I define it, is inviting God in the moment.
Okay.
Right? It's not necessarily, God, I want this, I want this, I want this, but God, I'm inviting you in this tough moment. Would you just sit with me? And sometimes people go to God, I want this, I want that. I think I've come to a point in my life where if I do come to God for something, and I, you know, in humility, I'm like, Lord, you're sovereign over this. You're outside of time. You know what's best for me. Whatever the answer is, let your will be done. And so sometimes with prayer, we're more like, God, I want this, I want this. But for me, in my walk with the Lord, is, Lord, I want to be in your presence. I want to see your face. And I just want to be with you and be in your will. Because what I want for myself won't get me too far. But I know whatever, if it's a yes, if it's a no, it's a maybe, it's a wait, whatever you have for me. I mean, it'll be tough, you know, whatever sure. the answer yeah. is. But I know for a fact that whatever God has for me, whatever it is that we're praying for God about, whatever his will is, it's the best. It might not feel like it, but it's the best.
That's bold.
Yeah.
I mean, just to invite God to kind of come and do as you want.
Yeah, even with my patient, I'm in the room. I'm talking to them. I'm like, Holy Spirit, I invite you in this moment. How do I approach this? How do I speak or not speak with this patient? And so that's how I've come to be with the Lord, even when I'm with others. I'm like, Lord, even being here with you guys and the questions and what you're saying, I'm in my head praying like, Lord, what do I say? And so it's just like inviting God in the moments. That's what I've come to term, like my definition of prayer, just inviting God in the moments.
Kind of like preparing for the message when you feel like, man, I'm going to be talking to a lot of people. A lot of people are going to see this and you're essentially, you're kind of speaking for God, or at least your version of your relationship with God and who you believe him to be.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing because, you know, a lot of people may just take that as that's who God is. Mm-hmm. And there might be some that disagree, but I mean, that's a kind of a big thing for me to think that someone might look at God the way I look at them and go, yeah, I think he's right. And you go, oh boy, I think I'm right. This might be a problem. You know, it's if you feel the weight of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as we end up with every podcast, first off, thank you. Because we know that, and I know this was just a couple of weeks ago, two sermons is a big deal back to back. It takes a lot out of you. And so not only when we ask you to preach, we make you preach twice, and then we make you come on the podcast and answer more questions and be part of it. But thank you for bringing your perspective, because it really, I always say that like the voices of whole life where we get new people, it's not because we don't love to listen to Ken. It's also because we get to meet new people and we hear those perspectives. And someone today gets to hear your perspective and your journaling and your prayer and the way you look at God, and they're going to go, ah, yeah, that's what I'm missing, because I've never thought of that before. So thank you for being willing to not only come and preach and do the podcast, but share your heart. It was really meaningful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So Ken, that must mean you're up this week.
You would think that.
Or you're in Europe. No.
I am not in Europe. I will be in the Caribbean.
Well, close.
Yeah.
So, not really. No.
Yeah. No, this week I will be going on vacation. So yay. I am looking forward to that. Another chance to recharge and spend some time with Rochelle. So the two of us are
so that on means vacation Lucas on is Friday. Preaching.
No.
So one of our amazing church members, Hurdley, is going to be preaching this Sabbath.
Nice.
Hurdley is a clinical psychologist, and she is going to be ushering us into Mental Health Awareness Month in May.
Oh, so she's, okay.
Melanie, I think you've read the sermon that she's prepared, and do you want to give any details or anything more?
I have read it. She's so wise and insightful. I think that you're going to get a lot out of this week's message, so don't miss it. But yeah, she definitely is bringing her wisdom to the pulpit and talking about how mental health is part of a holistic whole life.
So are we going to get a chance to talk with her on the podcast next week? Do you know?
We are.
We
yes,
are?
We are.
Man,
aww,
you guys
I'm
are so lucky.
I'm not going to be here for that. That's disappointing.
It's well, okay. We'll put a cutout
we'll
of
call you
in your
yeah.
chair.
I think it's $59.
I'll be watching to see whether that's on Slack or not.
$59.99, I think, is the Wi-Fi for the afternoon on the ship, isn't it?
So yeah, something like you know, this is actually one of the reasons why I like cruises, because I'm cheap and I'm not going to pay for the Wi-Fi. So now I have a good excuse when I can't be contacted.
That's
so.
Perfect.
We'll give him a satellite phone.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
A satellite phone?
Yeah.
There
you go.
Hush your mouth.
Yeah. If a dove arrives with a something taped to its foot.
then I'm in the ark and I'm doing all right.
You know what the note's going to say? Send sunscreen.
Oh, no.
Ken is done on this side.
So we have Hurley this week coming up. And then after that, I will be preaching a sermon. We're starting a series called Don't Forget. We're going to be talking about the importance of remembering. And that's one of the things that actually, in today's discussion, I thought was kind of a nice segue into what I'll be talking about. Because there's a tendency sometimes to want to forget the bad things in our life. And that's not always healthy. It's good to be able to put them to rest, just be able to good to process through them, but to not process them and just simply try to forget it can be extremely damaging, actually. And so we're going to talk about a lot of different things that we shouldn't forget. The first one is going to be don't forget the people who raised you. And so we're going to talk about our family of origin. It's going to be Mother's Day weekend, so it'll be a good time to be talking about that. And we're going to talk about the fact that Jesus had a good mother, but not a perfect mother. And so we're going to talk about maybe having a little self-forgiveness for those of us who are parents and who aren't perfect. That would be all of us. And we're also going to talk about, as children, how to process through what sometimes can be very difficult childhoods from the people who raised us. And how do we process through that? How do we sort through it? So we'll be talking about that. And I think that'll be a good one. And then after that, we have Adventure Sabbath. So yay, Adventures are going to be doing a lot of the program that Sabbath. And then we continue, and that'll also, they're going to continue the theme of Don't Forget. And they're going to be talking about Don't Forget the People Who Mentored You.
Man, don't miss summer at Whole Life. Because if you haven't
checked
yet.
Well, the summer is like, this is the preview to the summer, because the summer is a whole other series, our favorite things. And this, I've already got five solid sermons requests. I need another six more.
Yeah.
So we want your favorite Bible verse or story and why. And Randy and Lucas are going to find you and just do a quick video clip. I know this maybe scares some of you into not wanting to do this, but please do it, because I think it's going to be a lot more fun for us if we can get people to say this is what my favorite verse is and why. So yeah, be a part of that. You can send your request. Unlike the great question where I don't get to know the sermon ahead of time, I get to know the sermon ahead of time. So you can send it right to me, ken@wholelife.church. In fact, I'd encourage you to do it so that Melanie doesn't twist your words into something that's going to be harder for me.
Don't make him get out his backpack again.
But I'll give you one that came in that I had never spent any time on, that it's the Scarlet Worm.
Oh,
the Scarlet Worm.
Dun, dun, dun.
And one of our very avid listeners to this will know exactly what I'm talking about, because they turned it in.
What?
But it's the Scarlet Worm. And if you're not familiar with this, you're going to be.
All right. If it's an avid listener, then they've got to be in the Slack channel. So tonight, I'm expecting some Scarlet Worm information in the Slack channel.
I mean, feel free to own it if you want to, but don't give away anything before I get a chance to preach on this. This is good stuff. I'm excited about all of them, but this one was a fun one, because I had not spent any time on this particular. I'd never spent any time on the Scarlet Worm before.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, you're about to spend a lot more time on air conditioning and staying indoors, because May's around the corner, which means summer's around the corner. And tomorrow's high is 92. Give me a break.
Yeah. Bring it on.
So anyway.
I might take my sweater off.
She might. She's not committed.
No, I don't know.
She's not committed.
That's not how that works in hot climates, is that they crank the AC to about 60 degrees, and you go outside and you hit the 92, and
that 30 see, that 30 degree swing is
seesaw,
a real,
it's
a real
between those two.
Parka indoors.
Yeah. Do I get to talk for a minute about a significant change that's coming to
Yeah,
whole life.
It's going to be public knowledge very shortly. So yeah, go for it.
First preview for our podcast, folks.
They always get the first preview.
Let me ask you this, Randy. If I told you that I could save your house $50,000 a year, your household budget, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, I'd be ecstatic. I'd be in the black.
Okay. Nahimi, if I told you that I could save you $50,000 a year on your home budget, your personal budget, how would you feel about that?
I'd be rich.
You'd be rich. What would you be willing? Would you be willing to do about 20 to 30 minutes of work to make that happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
So
she's down. She's ready.
So here's the thing: we have discovered that by changing to a different online giving platform or provider for here at the church, that we can save the church $50,000 a year out of our budget, which is a significant amount of money. But what it does mean is that there is, I don't want to try to act like there is going to be a little bit of inconvenience for you who give to us regularly. We want to say we're sorry and we're grateful because that change, if you will just take probably 10 or 15 minutes, it means you're just going to have to reset up the way that you give. So if you're like me and you have a bank that you just kind of auto draft out of, or you go in there every month and you have your bank stuff saved, you're going to have to re-enter that. And so, like I said, that'll take you probably about 10 or 15 minutes, but that 10 or 15 minutes is going to save the church about $50,000 a year. And so we're really grateful that we think you're going to understand why it would be important for us to make that change if we can save $50,000. And we're hopeful that you will go ahead and still continue to give, and you'll make that change with us because you believe in the mission and vision of what we're doing here at Whole Life. And so thank you so much for how you're doing. The other really big benefit from us, besides the $50,000 of savings that we're going to get by making this change, is that this giving platform more closely aligns with the church management system that we use. And so it's a really a huge positive for us. It's not something, that part of it is not something that you'll notice as much as our finance team will notice. Karen and her team of people will be able to really see a big difference by the way this integrates into our system. And so this is going to be happening in, we're going to make the switch over in June. Am I right? Yep. In June is when. And so for June, if you don't make the switch in June, both platforms will still be up and working. So, but we'd love for you to make the switch in June, because when July rolls around, our current platform will be going offline. And then the only giving platform we'll have is the new one that's going to be helping us save money. So just, we wanted to kind of put that out there. You're going to be seeing a lot more information. Randy and Lucas have a whole plan to make sure that you're well-informed. We're going to have tables out in the lobby some of the weekends in case you need any help figuring things out. We're going to be there to kind of help walk you through any questions you might have in this process. But again, I want to say a huge thank you for how generous this church is. There is so much generosity in this church. And I really believe it comes from the belief in what we are accomplishing as a church, that we have so many things that we're doing that are benefiting this community, that are benefiting you spiritually, like this podcast and all the other variety of things that we do. So thank you for how you believe in it, and you believe in it enough to fund it. And we're really grateful for that.
And I would just say, like Ken mentioned, there's going to be a ton of information that's forthcoming on this, and we're not going to leave you to try to figure it out on your own. It's not going to be super difficult. It's just going to be a matter of entering information. But there's going to be some weekends where we're going to be in the lobby. You will know of that if you're part of the newsletter, the podcast. It'll be from up front. It'll be on. There'll be little cards on your seats. There's going to be a ton of ways to help make you, make you aware. And then my suggestion is come and see someone in the lobby and just say, hey, I'd like to make the change. And if you could help me, that'd be great. Because that's what we're going to do. That's why we're going to be there and make it as quick and painless as possible.
It's also an opportunity if you have any questions about the way that we go about doing things financially. We want to be transparent. We want you to feel good about the way that the money that you donate to God's work here at Whole Life, how it's being used. And so, so it's also a chance for you to have, you know, those kind of conversations with us as well.
50,000.
Which we're always open to those conversations, by the way.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we're looking forward to that. So be watching all kinds of, well, anywhere you walk, when church, social, everywhere, you'll find that this announcement will be ready for you. There'll be no way that you can possibly miss it. So we know what's coming up. It's Hurdley Paolini next week. And then after that, we start hitting into the summer. So every week, guys, the conversation that's happening over on Slack is a lot of fun too. We don't cover each of them every week, but last week Nate had a comment and then Roxana jumped in and I jumped in and we had this whole conversation over there. So there's another like little mini conversation that happens there. And then of course, all the other things that we discuss on the show that can't go in show notes, we always make sure you have them there. So please do send an email to podcast@wholelife.church from the email you want to be subscribed from and join the fun over there. So, and then every week, you know, really by Tuesday at noon, if you get the questions here, or if you sneak one past maybe about 3 o'clock, 2:30, we can still make the podcast. So please do send your questions because we do really enjoy having your questions and your insights as we go about the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.